moral support.
What do you have for us today, Justin?
Just following up from last 2 weeks ago.
We asked for a number, didn't we?
Asked for a bottom line. Just one thing I need to put in for here real quick is we based our quote off of a number that was given to us a month and a half ago or something like that. Mary gave me an updated number as of Friday, and so the savings isn't quite as great as it originally was, but we still come back with a better price. Your total savings is going to be $562 for the year, which may not sound like much, but you're not paying much right now for insurance as it is. Like I was saying earlier, this is a slightly better product. The value to your employees is actually much greater than what is currently there, and they will also save roughly that combined between what they're currently paying for their individual voluntary. So, but that's combined among them. But the biggest advantage that ours has over the other one is the waiver of premium, that if anything happens to them, they become disabled, New York Life takes over that payment for them on for their voluntary life insurance. And that's not currently on the current plan. It's the best. Our waiver premium is the best you can get probably in the industry, I would argue. And the reduced premium, the scheduled reduction that comes with age and all that, ours, if you remember, was much better than the other one, where they're left with an additional 10%. Instead of having 15% at the very end, they're left with 25%, which is significantly greater. And that's kind of all I have. I didn't want to waste your guys' time, so.
Bottom line.
Yeah. Bottom line savings.
What? Bottom line savings.
562.
Okay.
So I guess my question for you is, when do you need to know what we decide?
Well, you guys, you said September 1st is your thing. So if I could know by, say, what is today, 22nd?
That one is a...
Yep. So I would need to know soon just so we could get the paperwork done, so that way by September 1st we could just have you guys rolled over and good to go.
Should have said 1:30.
Yeah,
I'll give you a little more time.
1:45.
But just so that way we can make it seamless and smooth for you guys.
When did we last talk about this?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
I was gone.
I'm sitting here.
Questions. Last time you were here was probably 6 weeks ago when I came in.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yep.
Mary, the paperwork, the all of that stuff that we have nothing to do with, what is it? What are your thoughts in terms of the transition? Is for $562, are we talking a huge amount of paperwork to get this moved, changed? Does that make sense?
Well, I know that there's about 160 county employees.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the rural healthcare district employees also that are on our health insurance, or on that whole insurance package. So it would be...
Well, this is completely separate from your health insurance package.
But we've got term with part of our health insurance as well.
Oh, gotcha. I was not made aware of that.
Yeah.
So would this have any effect with our existing that's provided with the health insurance?
Yeah,
would
carve it
would
out.
This just be... Would this eliminate that and replace it with this? Or would they continue that and just to have additional term insurance? I guess I'm kind of don't quite understand.
Because like the bill part that we were looking at was what you paid to Lincoln Financial. And that was what my understanding was, what we replaced, not whatever comes also, because Lincoln Financial doesn't have health insurance. insurance that goes
right,
with it.
Right, but there, that's the health insurance that comes with the, as part of the...
Is there any consequences with carving this out of the other policy? Is that going to create some issues?
Hard to say.
Hard to say. I wouldn't know.
Okay. Well, I mean, in terms of them raising our rates on the other?
Whatever the issue may be, I don't know.
Do we need to talk to them before we make a decision?
No, I think so. I think I would.
That might be worth our time.
Yeah, to figure out what we're talking about.
That's fine. I don't want to complicate things at all. So.
But still, you've spent a lot of time on this, and
you
give us this information. So we want to be fair with you.
And as far as like the switchover and stuff like that, I mean, it would depend on how much you got, on how much you wanted to do it. Just give me the information. I could do most of it and enter most of it myself to keep it out of your guys' hair. You know, as far as like for all the information for the total employees and then the voluntary deductions, I could get all that set up if that information is given to me. Then you guys don't have to worry about administrative time. I could set it up. So.
Well, then we have the advantage as well as having a local agent to deal with.
Yeah. Who was your agent, or do you guys have an agent? Okay. Is Ken retiring or no?
I think he's done here pretty quick, I'm not sure. I'm sure at the end of the month, I think.
I was told at the end of this month is when he was done, and not that I'm just trying to step in on his, but I don't know if you want whoever eventually steps into his spot or myself. I'm not going to say, like, oh, I'm better or worse because I respect Ken immensely, so it's not like...
I think give us a minute or some time to chat with him, too, and we'll get back to you.
Okay.
Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah,
let's look into this a little deeper.
Sure. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. And you have my number. I don't have a bunch of cards sitting on me, but if you guys have any questions immediately, give me a call. I'll be on the spot for it. So
okay.
I'll keep my phone on, you know, in case we need to. And in the meantime, what I will do is, because the number varied, I will call back our underwriters and see if we have any wiggle room to make a little bit more on the savings. You know, I kind of doubt it because they seem pretty firm on where they're at. But if we can wiggle, that would be great. So to help that out just a little bit more. So. Okay.
So is that something we could reasonably expect to do by our next meeting, if in 2 weeks? Question. I don't know.
Well, 2 weeks would be past the first.
Yeah, I know.
Be past
but we won't be meeting before
right,
that.
Right, right.
Yeah. Does that cause a big problem, being past the first, or is that like...
Well, I don't know. That's... You would know that. For me, no.
Okay. We need to do a little bit of work.
Sure.
Do they... is it a year contract? Or I mean, I know you guys pay it month to month. Would it be one thing if you paid September's and we have it figured out by October?
Well, that's the thing is that I don't think that we have a expectation of continuation with them.
Right.
Necessarily.
Right.
We could switch over at some point in time.
Okay.
It isn't a contract like our health insurance is. You know,
so we've got time to look into it.
Yeah, we've got time to look.
Okay.
So let me work on my end, work on your end, we'll stay in touch, and we'll
see what.
Okay.
I like that.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thanks
again, Justin.
Thank you. Thanks, Dave.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Oh, yes.
You're welcome to stay.
Uh-oh.
Hi, Dave.
How are you?
Her?
Oh, no, I'm just kidding. I was getting this guy back here a bit. I see this woman.
How are you, Betty?
I'm good. How about you?
Yeah.
It'd be better if I had my hand closer to being up.
Oh, come on. You're probably about finished.
No, we're not. We're behind.
Really?
Almost 2 weeks behind getting our cows on the mountain, waiting for the snow to melt.
You better whip that crew up. That's all I can say to you.
We're whipping on our crew, right? Except I'm not there, I'm here.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what I mean. You need to whip up them.
Yeah, get this meeting over with so I can get home and bail some hay.
How are you, Betty?
Well, do you want a break?
I'm good.
Go on. Shall we move
I'm good.
On? Okay. Susan?
Yes.
You're on.
I'm on?
I know.
Okay.
Here we go. Live on the edge.
We do have a time we need to 1:45
okay.
to be done for an executive session. So.
Okay, I'm gonna. I tried to shorten this, and I tend to be verbose. So, are you related to Cotton Bousman?
Yes.
Are you his?
I'm his father.
Mother?
Yeah.
Oh, my dad told that story all the time about him going to Clinton.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's a
Do you guys want copies? They're kind of updated a little
You're
bit.
Need. Oh, okay. You can give yourself a try.
I'll try to make it shorter, but. Okay, so basically, the Rural County Healthcare District hired me a couple months ago to find out why people in the community, the 40% of the people in the community were against the critical access hospital. And I went and tried to find the people who were against it to tell me what they thought was wrong with it. And one of the biggest issues was this idea of financial mismanagement. Where did all the money go? Where did $100 million in mill levy?
So, Susan, before you go on,
yeah.
are you here then as a...
I'm here as a paid consultant.
A paid consultant, so you're representing the district?
Rural County Healthcare District.
Okay.
Somebody's supposed to be here, but I guess they've abandoned me. So so I'm a paid consultant right now. Yes, question.
We are early according to our agenda, so if you are waiting on somebody.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah,
So they hired me to look and figure out where the money went because the community has a right to know. It's taxpayers' money. So I went through, this goes over the sources of information, audited financial statement, meeting minutes, interviews, newspaper archives, talking with other people we've been compared to, Star Valley Medical Center, Buffalo, Johnson County, and the head of the Wyoming Hospital Association. And initially I started out doing lots and lots of research on the audited financial statements, but what came up was that it was more of a business model problem. There were some mistakes made when the business models were changed and when the clinics were built, because we went from smaller clinics to bigger clinics, and it wasn't done in a financially sound manner. So,
let me interrupt you just a minute. When you say we went from smaller clinics to bigger clinics, are we talking about square footage? Are we talking about services?
Well, for instance, how many lab technicians did you have when you were running the clinic?
I wasn't running the clinic when they took it over.
No, but when you were running the clinic, how many lab technicians did you have?
One.
Was that you, or was that, because I was told the nurses and the EMS did it, the thing.
You know, I guess if you wanted to know, you could come and talk to me. Because
okay, well,
I was the one running the clinic.
Right. Well, the bottom line is that you expanded the amount of services that you were giving. But and
that's what I'm asking. When you're saying that.
It was both, right?
Are we doubling the size of the clinic, doubling the size of employees, or doubling the size of clinic services or patient visits? I'm just trying to get straight on what you're referencing to when you say we doubled the size.
I didn't say we doubled the size. We went from, and this was I found from the meeting minutes. Dr. Jones came in, and it was written in the meeting minutes, and he says that what we had was more simplistic clinics, and we had gone to a clinic that was, you know, we have a CT scanner now. We have more lab equipment. And so you went to having, you know, instead of having, what I was told is that instead of having where a nurse or an EMS could read the labs, you needed to have, like, trained lab technicians. And then they got to where they had a lab manager. And so it was like, it was, you were still a clinic, but the types of labs that could be done were increased. They went from, you know, up here you had Dr. Boyle, and then you had went to like four medical doctors. But allow me to get through
okay.
a little bit farther.
Okay.
Okay. So just we've been compared a lot to Star Valley, and if you look at, you know, the top of page two, it shows that Star Valley went from $2 million in revenues to $25 million in revenues, and in 2008 they built a new hospital. By contrast, in our 2006 audited financial statements, we had $1.4 million in revenues, and we've gone to a little over $3 million in revenues as of, you know, last year. So how did Star Valley do it? Star Valley right-sized their services. Look at the bottom of page 2. Star Valley, you know, looked at what was the right combination of services for a community of 11,000 people that would bring in the right mix of higher revenues and profitability. All right, we apparently didn't do that. And the ones with the asterisks are the ones that we have: EMS, emergency room, family practice, laboratory, and radiology. Whereas they have all these other things, which were more profitable. Now, I apparently have a duplicate of that slide at the top of 3. But if you look at the bottom of slide 3, another thing that these new consultants are saying is that the average amount of revenue spent in America is about $9,000 per person, which means as a community our size, it's about $90 million. We're getting $3 million. We could be getting much higher. And when these consultants came in, if you did some calculations on the examples they gave, those other communities with like about the same size as we are, they were bringing in about 25% of their total spend. Now this shows like just an example, and it's not perfect, but of somebody who has a type of breast cancer that needs chemo and radiation. Right now we can do the mammography, which is about $1,200. Where Star Valley, now they're not getting all of this chemo, but they can do everything but the radiation therapy. They can do the biopsy, they can do the lumpectomy, they can't do the radiation therapy, although Rock Springs does, and they can do the chemotherapy. So that's like $150,000. Now some of that chemo is going to be done, you know, shared with a medical oncologist that's done through telemedicine. But still, what they did is they increased their share of the pie for the same patient having the same issue. And another reason why they're making so much more money is if you look at the top of slide 4, now this is an example of my mom with her Prolia shot. All hospitals, whether they're a critical access hospital or not, all hospitals reimburse at higher rates if it's a hospital as opposed to a clinic or a doctor in private practice. My mom gets a Prolia shot for her bones twice a year at a clinic. Medicare says that they can charge, that they can bill $2,000. So at these clinics, they can bill $2,000. Medicare pays $1,500. My mom pays $500. At St. John's, and I tried to get the same numbers from Johnson County Healthcare, but they didn't get back to me. But at any rate, but this is at St. John's, which isn't a critical access hospital, but because it's a hospital, Medicare says they can reimburse at, that they can bill at $3,500. My mom pays nothing. And so the bottom, what I'm trying to point out here is that the reimbursement rates are significantly higher for a hospital in general and for a critical hospital, access hospital in particular. And so that's why Afton Medical, you know, Afton or Buffalo or any other, a rural health care district in Wyoming looks more financially favorable than we are, because we're the only ones with a clinic. Now, getting back to some of the mistakes that were made, and I don't want to name, you know, I want to emphasize, if we were in some place like Salt Lake, the people on our board might have been a retired person who ran clinics and an accountant and a lawyer, but we're in a rural community and we take people who want to come in and do what's best for the community, even though they don't have a perfect understanding of how to run a clinic. And so there were a couple of mistakes that were made. Some of them were made by your predecessors. When they made the loans for the clinics, and after reading the notes, yes, I agree, it was loans, but they never required a business plan and a financial projections. And so the Rural County Healthcare District didn't have, in the mid-aughts, they didn't have a clear understanding of the money that was being spent, because they didn't have, it took them 2 years to get an administrator, and 2 years to get a CFO. And during that period of time, they didn't have a clear picture of their financial statements. If you go and you read through the minutes, you will see when Lorraine was hired in 2007, you know, they had consolidated EMS, they had consolidated the clinics, and their two bookkeepers had quit. And so they didn't really know what they were doing. And it took her a year going through a literal paper trail to figure out, to balance all the accounts and figure out how much money they had. And so because the county commissioners back then did not require a set of financial projections, they didn't know. I mean, you guys, not you guys, but your predecessors were the bankers. And you loaned money to an institution without knowing if they had the ability to repay. Now, a second, I know that you were on the board. You were the one who told me that they didn't have a business plan or set of financial projections.
I did not say that exactly.
What did you say?
I said that a person who was nameless at this point too came in to ask us to loan them this amount of money and handed us a sheet of paper. I said nothing about a business plan.
Yeah, well, that's the way I remember it. But at the same time, there was no detailed set of financial statements at that time. There was nobody doing the projections. Another problem that was made was that there was, and this is a quote that I heard, if we build it in Pinedale, we will build it in Marbleton. Marbleton has a significantly lower number of people, the Marbleton metro area, than the Pinedale metro area. If you look at the, it's not on the next page, but basically, we built a clinic that was too robust down in Marbleton relative to the amount of services. And the next two slides are...
Susan, can I interrupt you again?
Go ahead.
Do you know the history behind that in terms of what was being discussed at the time in terms of building what was referred to as the Taj Mahal in Pinedale and nothing being built in Big Piney? Do you have the overall picture or where is this coming from? I remember it quite differently because at the time there was discussion about the healthcare district using their money to build a clinic, but they didn't have enough money to build two clinics, and they were going to build one clinic in Pinedale with nothing being built in the southern end of the county. And that's where, as I remember, the discussion came forward about building two equitable clinics.
Mm-hmm.
So
I hear what you're saying, and I got a different. When I interviewed past board members dating back to the 90s, and what I was told by two board members at that time, 2004, 2005, was that they came to the county commissioners and they said, "Look, we need new clinics because the clinics are falling apart. Because, like, even in the Marbleton clinic, just fixing the door frame, they were running into OSHA problems." And so they said, we need two new clinics. And they said, we have enough money to build one clinic. Can you help us with the money to build the second clinic? Now, that's what I was told three or four times by a board member at that time. So it wasn't, now maybe there was discussion about the Taj Mahal in Pinedale, but and something significantly smaller in Marbleton. But by stipulating that they needed to be equal, when you have half the population down in the Marbleton Big Piney area, wasn't right sizing. Now maybe you could have done more from what they were originally discussing, but equal was not significant. If you look at this page right here, it shows the services given in Marbleton and Big Piney in the past month. And what you'll see is that the numbers, the amount of services in EMS and it's on the next, sorry, on the next page, Joel,
you,
if you,
you
go
keep
over
referring
one.
To board members you've talked to. Can you tell us who?
Sure. Mike Pompey, Dave Rasich, also Marilyn Worrell, Jerry Jensen, trying to think if there are any more. Those are the main ones that I spoke with. And then also reading through all the meeting minutes, going through all the newspaper archives as well. Not all the meeting minutes, but from 2004 up through 2011, it was pretty much all the meeting minutes. And for the county commissioners, it probably only got up through about 2010.
I have a question, and it's a clarification for myself.
Yeah.
The clinics were built. You're saying that one of the clinics, the one in Big Piney and Marbleton, was really too big.
Yeah.
It wasn't a plan.
Right.
But The county commissioners paid for both clinics.
Right.
No one paid the money back.
That, okay, we're getting off topic. And if you want to talk about that, I'll give you my professional opinion.
No, I'm just
opinion.
Saying they never paid the money back, because whether they were asked to pay the money back or weren't asked to pay the money back, doesn't matter.
Okay.
The fact is, they didn't have to pay any money back.
True. However, they built a system that required a certain staffing level. If you go, okay, so let's look at emergency care, for example. When they cut after hours emergency in Marbleton Big Piney, they saved $1 million a year. All right? In the old model, doctors under contract were required to pay to provide 24/7 service. After hours, Dr. Burnett and his physician's assistants would be sitting at home. If there was a call that came in, typically, as I've been told, the physician's assistants would go in, and if it was serious enough, Dr. Burnett or Dr. Boyle or Dr. Johnson would be called in.
That's incorrect. We all took call equally and shared call equally, and that's my concern about the source of this information. Mm-hmm. I wasn't contacted. I was involved, and I can guarantee you that I took as much or more call than anybody that ever worked for me. I didn't have them take call and then call me if they needed me. I took the share call, and then if they were on call and they needed extra services, I came in addition to that.
Okay.
So I just...
All right. Well, you know, that's the way I originally had the presentation when I spoke last week, but then I was told that that wasn't the case, because I know when my father had a problem, my brother called you. You came in and, you know, you saved my dad's life, you know, because you came in, but that's off topic. But the main thing is that you were sitting at home, all right, or doing whatever you wanted to do. And when it was billed as an office visit, in the new model, they had eight full-time medical doctors who were supposed to be there, and that you had a registered nurse and a lab technician, and they were sitting in the clinic, not being paid to be in the clinic. Again, because it's not a hospital, it's billed as an office visit for like around $250 or so, relative to the average cost of a medical visit, according to research that I did in 2013, was $2,900. So you have more lab equipment, higher end, trained lab technicians, a medical doctor sitting around on the weekends waiting for something to happen, and a registered nurse. And then also, because of this model, there was more expensive staffing ramifications. They hired 4 full-time medical doctors, whereas if it didn't have emergency room services, if they were not required to provide emergency room services. This is the only county where family practitioner doctors are also required to do to spend time sitting in an emergency room. And so instead of having what's cheaper would have been like 3 medical doctors and 5 mid-levels, like physician's assistants. But because they staffed it at 8 full-time medical doctors who would split up the on-calls. And because of that, you had to pay more money for the medical doctors to come here because they had to do the on-calls. And additionally, during the day, instead of having a lower cost certified nurse's assistant, helping the doctor out, you needed to have a more expensive registered nurse in case the nurse needed to be called into the emergency room during the day. So that was significantly more expensive and added a lot of costs. And same thing with emergent EMS. The EMS went from a volunteer EMS to a paid EMS. The ambulance, I was told by one of the former EMSs, Jackie Strike, she says sometimes the ambulances would break down. The patients, she says there was one case where, because it was volunteer, it took several hours for them to get to a woman who had broken her hip because people were at work. In general, here in Sublette County, we have longer runs, 5 hours for a transport instead of 1 or 2, and so you need higher staffing levels. And before the oil boom, you had fewer runs. During the oil boom, you had higher runs. And then employers started complaining, are you working for, are you a volunteer EMS or are you working for me? And according to an article I read in the paper, it said there was difficulty attracting additional volunteers at that time. And Whereas, you know, just 4 years ago, they had gone to professional EMS. They had invested in the ambulances. After the oil boom, they didn't have as many calls. If you see here, you see that the costs went up, and the lower part is the revenues, and the upper part is the expenses. So the expenses are significantly higher than the costs. And they had long runs, and they had a structure for overtime pay that was extremely costly. Today, it's still professional EMS, but they have right-sized for the community. Somebody who was hired, who was working here before, had a lot of expertise in right-sizing the amount of EMS in the community, given our size and the number of runs. They also decreased the expenses, you know, by reducing staff, but also one of the biggest things was changing the charges in the overtime calculations. And so there were a lot of factors that led into why we had, it's not just the size of the clinic, it was also the types of things that you were doing. And you were doing, they were doing things that were, again, not all that profitable. They weren't doing, you know, for a community of, you know, of 11,000 people versus, you know, now 9,000 people in Sublette County, and in Star Valley, which is now ranked one of the top 20 critical access hospitals in the country, they went and they right-sized things. Our people 10, 12 years ago didn't do that. They didn't think, you know, they didn't, I don't know if they didn't call in the right consultants.
Just for my own clarification here, you're saying that because they got a free building in Big Pine or Marbleton, that is, for whatever reason, too big, that all this is contributed because of the building being too big.
It's not because
had nothing to do with any of these factors after they got a free building.
Okay, so I totally changed this from the way I did it last time. The last time went through a lot of the history because I wanted to shorten it. It was like a 45-minute presentation. But basically what happened, like in late 2006, the bookkeeper quit. And even so, a bookkeeper's not supposed to be doing projections. And they didn't really have, even though they had, this is what Dave Resich told me. He said, even though we had people with substantive business experience, like Judd Failer and Gary Iden, and a former lieutenant governor who should know about budgeting, for some reason, nobody did a really thorough financial analysis. And in 2006, they were having a very difficult time hiring an administrator. So you have a group of board members who are supposed to be a managing board, who were becoming the de facto administrators who didn't know how to run a medical clinic. And they were having a difficult time hiring an administrator because they weren't offering enough salary. And if you go to, I don't know where it is, did I include it? I hope so. Well, maybe I didn't. But this one right here, page 10. This is an article from the Sublette County Examiner in September 2006. And basically, it shows Walt Bausman and some of the others discussing the fact that they're having a difficult time hiring administrators and doctors because they're not charging enough, and they make a decision to increase the amount of money that they charged. That was September. It took like another 7 months before they got an administrator, and instead of paying, you know, $110,000, he cost about $300,000. Because he was in West Virginia, he was working here 2 weeks and there 2 weeks. The oil boom had driven up the cost of housing. We were providing housing, which was, Marilyn Worrell said, it should have cost $400, now it was costing $1,200 for something, and they were flying him back and forth. And so you had a group of people doing their best in 2006 to create the right business model to fit into those clinics. And they didn't know what they were doing, and they didn't have a clear picture of their financials. And when Kip came in, they still didn't have a clear picture of their financials. And so he started hiring. He's like, okay, we need a director of nursing. We need a director of labs. We need a director of radiology. We need two office managers, one for each clinic. We need two supply managers, one for each clinic. And so he started hiring a lot of people before they knew what their financials were. Now, if you go through it in 2008, all of a sudden, in July 2008, if you read the minutes, you see Lorraine come in and say, we've got $3 million in the account. We're just about to start buying equipment for Marbleton. We're in trouble. And in the same meeting minutes, you also see people saying, well, the county commissioners are coming down on us because they want us to start repaying the clinics. And I'm not going to name names here, but you know, some of the people on the board at that time were like, what do you mean we need to pay it back? And basically, about the time they figured out they didn't have the financial wherewithal to pay it back, your predecessors, and I think you were on the board at that time, had just joined the board, the county commissioners, basically said, you know, where's the money? You know, when are you going to pay us back? And 2 months later, they did go back into the county commissioners and said, we're going in the red. Will you help cover us? And I think you were the one who said it, and I've read the county commissioner meeting notes, and you basically said, go take a hike. We're not going to, I think the phrase was, we're not going to help dig you out of the hole you dug yourself into. And at that time, now there's a lot of complaints about Lorraine. If you read the minutes, she started driving efforts to lower costs, and she was basically the one who saved them, because Bill Budd went to the county, to the state to try and figure out if they could raise the mill levy, and Cindy Van was driving efforts to get named as a critical, no, a rural health clinic, and both of those failed. The voters voted down the increase in the mill levy, and whoever certifies as a rural health clinic said we didn't at that time have enough Medicare patients coming through our clinic. We do now, according to Lorraine, but we didn't then. And so the things that saved us were two things. Number one, Lorraine driving cost cutting. And number two, then manna from heaven came. There was the largest spike in mill levy revenues that we've ever had. We went from like 6 or 7 million to 12 million in 2012. And then, you know, the second administrator left. And Melinda when the second administrator came in, Rob Harding, he tried to promote the critical access hospital, but the staff and the board didn't think it was viable. Some board members did, but that was voted down by the Rural County Healthcare District in around 2010 or so. In 2013, Melinda came in, and her first week, she started going over the financial statements, going over the number of visits, going over the number of people in the county, and she walked into Lorraine's office and she goes, this isn't financially viable. How do you guys make this work? You've got two emergency rooms 36 miles apart in a county with 10,000 people, and you've got 8 full-time medical doctors, and you know, it's not financially viable. And since that time, they've been trying to move to the critical access hospital, and that's the thing that's going to save them. And if they don't, when I first learned about it, they were supposed to run out of money, basically be bankrupt, in 2019. Because of cost cutting and Lorraine's good financial management, they've extended that to 2022. And in 2022, according to one of the things that I've read, is that one of the state statutes or whatever and for county commissioners is that your responsibility is the healthcare clinics. So when they run out of money in 2022, you guys are going to have to make decisions. Are you going to cut more services and have people in, you know, Marbleton and Big Piney, which are the ones who lose services first, be very, very upset with you? Or are you going to start bailing them out? Or are you going to support the critical access hospital?
We haven't cut any services.
We've cut...
No, we. The commissioners haven't cut any services.
But in 2022...
The healthcare district has cut.
Yeah, and in 2022, when they run out of money, they run out of reserves.
Okay.
Then you guys are going to be on the hook.
I'd like to make a comment, Mr.
Okay.
Chairman.
Yes.
I find it, to put it politely, somewhat ironic. In your opening discussion, that says we got into this situation because the two mistakes were the not requiring business plan and financial projections on the part of the county commissioners.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me finish. Okay. This is what I find somewhat disturbing as well as ironic.
Right.
At that particular time, I suppose, and maybe you that were present could enlighten me or support me, but I suppose at that time, the county commissioners we're trusting the rural healthcare district and simply giving them the request that they made. Okay? Mm-hmm. So therein, it's not their responsibility for getting a financial plan.
Right.
It may be their mistake
yes.
for not asking for
yes.
one.
Yes.
Here's the irony.
Yes.
Here we are 3 years later into this discussion,
yes.
and the county commissioners have been requesting
yes.
of the healthcare district
a financial business plan,
and we've
it.
Yet to receive one.
You're
so
right.
I find that a little bit disturbing and ironic. The finger pointing at one end is because we didn't ask for it, and now the finger pointing at the other end is we did ask for it and we don't have it.
Okay, you are absolutely correct, and I apologize. I tried to make this presentation simpler, to make it shorter, and I left out a lot of other stuff. And in the other version, I made it very, very, I tried to make it very, very clear that it was a combination of things at the time. You had the new board in 2006, even though you had some business people on the board, they didn't do the projections. Their bookkeeper quit right away, even though a bookkeeper is retroactive. And it was their responsibility to come up with a decent set of financial projections. They didn't. And it was at the same time as the loan officers. I used to be a commercial lender. As the loan officers, it was incumbent upon the county commissioners to make sure that if they were loaning money, that there was a good, solid business plan behind it. So if that's just...
Let's just step back.
Yeah. This didn't mean to put everything out on
you. It may have been perceived as a loan at that point, but it's never been repaid. It was a gift.
Yeah.
It became a gift.
Right.
So the finance... I mean, it's a gift.
Yeah.
Let's refer to it as a loan. It's
yeah.
a gift. They've never repaid it.
Right.
It's a handout.
Right.
And you're telling us that that was the root problem of all of their financial...
Let me try and reiterate. I apologize. I was not trying to put it all on you, but because I'm presenting to the county commissioners, and I have read the meeting minutes where you guys have, you know, gotten upset with the Rural County Healthcare District for not repaying the loan, and I'm just trying to point out that, yes, first and foremost, any business before they do something as big as build new clinics and expand services should have had a very, very solid business plan and a very solid number of financial statements. They should have had that before they even came to you, and before they got your approval. But at the same time, as their commercial lenders, your predecessors were negligent in not requiring that.
So, as Doc put it, ironic, we've been requesting a financial and business plan.
Yes.
And that was one of the reasons we said we weren't moving forward
exactly.
at this point.
At this time.
Yeah. You're totally...
So we're doing exactly what you're
yes,
saying.
Exactly.
So...
I totally agree with you. When I sat in on the meeting in April, and at the end of the meeting when everybody's harassing you about why you turned down, you voted them down, one of you, I can't remember who it was because there were so many people in front, said, you've never given us a business plan. And this light went off. And I went and I asked them, I said, why didn't you ever give a business plan? And they said, well... you know, they've never asked for one. And I spoke to other people, and they said, yes, they have asked for one. And the response that I got was, other times you had asked for things, you had made a motion. And in this case, there wasn't a motion. And I hammered them. I hammered them.
Mark Cross, we've got emails. It's Mark Cross asked for a business plan more than once.
Use a quote from my father, I ripped them a new asshole over the fact that they hadn't ever provided you guys with a business plan and a solid set of financials. They said, but we've had these consulting reports. And I said, the consulting reports are for you guys to build the business plan and present it to them with a set of financial statements. I mean, that's what I do right now. I work with startups, and that's what I build for them.
Well,
and so you're absolutely right.
I understand. We've got
a couple questions. I know Betty had her hand up.
Okay.
It's okay.
The comment I'd like to make just in closing is, number one, the commissioners have never said they are opposed to a critical access hospital. We have never made that statement. Number two, I am in agreement with your assessment, having run that business, that the only viability that we can look forward to the future in terms of increasing recapture or reimbursements is through a critical access hospital.
Good.
It appears to me that we're still dragging out history and the past when the whole thing needs to evolve around what are we building, what are we doing, instead of dwelling on this.
Well, the reason that I did this was because even though people say we need to move forward, everywhere I go, people still say, well, what did they do with the money? Isn't Melinda overpaid? Isn't Lorraine overpaid? Where did $100,000 in mill levy revenue go? And it's kind of like you need to say, okay, this is where the money went. There were some mistakes made in the past, some paths that were not taken that would have led us to a better position. And this is just to explain to you that there was a complicated history. This particular board, this particular administration is, in my opinion, doing the right thing. And they've brought in the right group, the right group of consultants to lead them in the right direction. One of the things that really impressed me was when those consultants spoke to us and they gave us examples of other communities, is just like Star Valley, they went from about $3 million to $27 million, and even more impressive, their operating margins, their profitability after operating expenses, were 5 to 7%. The average operating margin, the average operating profits for a critical access hospital in Wyoming is only 3%. The average operating profits for a Western critical access hospital is 1.9%. So I think they're doing the right thing. And why I'm here is because I'm hoping that you'll recognize is that this group are trying to do the right thing, and you can't hold them responsible for decisions that were made in 2006 and 2007.
You just held us responsible for the whole thing.
Not you. Well,
I'm sorry.
No. It's written that way, but let me reemphasize. I've said this three times. I rewrote this, and the other version made a greater emphasis on the fact that the Rural County Healthcare District at that time were remiss in not getting that to you and in not having those financials. But at the same time, your predecessors have to take responsibility for, at that time, approving the clinics without having a business plan and a financial and financial models. All right?
Mr. Chairman,
have I made that clear?
Can I say one thing?
Yes.
Yeah. Matt, I only can deal with what I know.
Yeah.
And I can only deal with what I know since I've been a commissioner.
Right.
At a commissioner's meeting, Mr. Chairman, Andy Nelson made the comment that, well, what do you guys think about foregoing the $100,000 to the Rural Healthcare Board this year for the maintenance contract? And we did not vote on it, but it was a suggestion. We didn't agree completely, but we didn't disagree. The next night, I go to a Rural Healthcare Board meeting, and Mr. Batchelor, correct me if I'm wrong, made a comment that he felt that they should pay half of the $30,000 to do the survey that we paid for to get more information. They voted 3-2 not to give us the $15,000. Now, you'll have to help me. The next morning was the $100,000 check on your desk?
Yeah.
So they gave up $15,000 for $100,000. So those are the snapshots. You have snapshots here. Those are the only kind of snapshots that I can have to figure out who's running this show financially, and things like that. I have questions.
In my personal opinion, I don't think there's anybody on that board who feels confident digging through financials and
well, this wasn't a financial. This was a simple conversation.
Yeah.
$100,000 to $15,000.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I wasn't there.
Well, then you're saying
we're not gonna accomplish anything by discussing this further. So let's move on to our next agenda.
I'm not blaming all of you, but just saying that your predecessors had a small part in allowing them to get into a mess, overextending money they couldn't afford to repay. So.
Thanks, Susan.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Three. Are we... You owe me?
No, you owe me.
Do we have a motion to go into executive session to discuss personnel?
Yes, sir. I move that we go into executive session.
Is there a second?
Seconded.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
You have a nice day.
You also.
Afternoon.
Hey, ma'am. How are you?
Good comment at the end, Mike.
Well, it's so I think I can understand. It was just a situation.